Hi, it's your pal Steamed Hams. Join me every week on the Unforgettable Luncheon as we discuss topics in the nerd world like gaming, comics, cartoons, and whatever else may cross my mind. You can find me on the socials as SteamedHams81 on Twitch, Twitter, and Instagram, and YouTube. You can also find me as the Unforgettable Luncheon on Facebook. And check out Steamed Hams Merchatorium, the link to which will be in the description of this podcast. The Unforgettable Luncheon. Nerd comedy at its okayest.
The Simpsons. It's the longest running animated series in history. 34 seasons and counting, it's had a big impact on the world as we know it. As someone who grew up watching the show, it's had an effect on me as well, shaping my sense of humor, much to the chagrin of those who know me. Today, we're going to talk about my 5 favorite episodes of The Simpsons, today on The Unforgettable Luncheon. Greetings, it's your old pal Steamed Hams. I hope you're ready for another Unforgettable Luncheon. Yes, I know, I did a Simpsons episode already. But that was just a warm-up. Now we're getting down to some nitty-diddly-gritty. Seasons 2 to 11 are considered the Golden Age, after which some fans felt it was declining following Matt Groening's departure to focus on Futurama. You know, if it's in a decline, 23 years is one hell of a slow decline. I grew up with the Golden Age, leaving to join the United States Navy shortly after the end of the Golden Age. I didn't see much for a few years as we didn't exactly get Fox while I was stationed in Japan. Thankfully, Disney Plus is letting me catch up, so I get to see the stuff I missed. Now, these episodes, presented in seasonal order, are some of my favorites. I couldn't list all of my favorites, otherwise this would probably be a 3-parter. These episodes helped shape, or warp, my sense of humor. So, without further ado, let's get into my 5 favorite Simpsons episodes. The first one we're going to discuss is Camp Krusty, the first episode of Season 4. It's one of my early favorites, one that I watched often because I believe my parents had recorded it on VHS because we were probably off doing something family-wise when it was on. I discussed it in a previous episode, but we're going to get a bit more in-depth here. Essentially, the premise is Bart and Lisa are going off to Camp Krusty for the summer, leaving Homer and Marge home alone to act like, you know, childless singles, despite having Maggie, which we don't see a whole lot through the episode. The kids are excited. The show opens with Bart thinking the last day of school is wrecking the school to Alice Cooper's School's Out for the Summer. Or actually, it's School's Out. And him having to forge grades in order to be able to go to Camp Krusty, which Homer is like, we're going to send you anyways. So the kids get to Camp Krusty, and instead of it being kind of an idyllic summer wonderland, it is a nightmarish hellhole run by the nefarious Mr. Black, who was the president of Euro Krusty Land until it blew up. His counselors are Jimbo, Dolph, and Carney, because who in their right mind would really get the 3 biggest bullies in the elementary school to be the camp counselors? Now, my question is, they're in the elementary school, yet they're camp counselors. I don't get it, but, you know, then again, they probably got held back a bunch. They're probably like 15, 16 years old for all we know. They never actually establish ages. The kids are basically housed in dilapidated cabins, fed gruel, and forced to make sweatshop merchandise that got to be on the streets of Hong Kong by Friday. They're strung along with the promise of a visit from Krusty towards the end of the summer, which Bart hangs on to just furiously. The visit, quote-unquote, eventually comes in the form of Barney dressed as Krusty, who is explained to having laryngitis and a bad back, so he won't be saying anything or doing anything. Of course, Bart calls them out on this, starts a revolution, takes over the camp, and the bad guys escape, because it's like an 80s cartoon. And Krusty gets wind of this, realizing that, oh shit, I better do something. Goes to the camp, tries to make amends with the kids, and takes them to Tijuana for the rest of the summer. I don't know why that decision came along. You know, this dumbass clown actually took a busload of kids down to the worst place you could take a busload of kids, this side of Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. I mean, I could just see the parents picking up the children. How was your summer? Great, Mom. I won $500 in a back alley cockfight, and I got this sweet tattoo. Oh, the lawsuits. Of course, this is never mentioned again, as I'm assuming Krusty also refunded the camp fees and probably paid hush money settlement, which is probably the norm for Krusty with all the shit he probably pulls. So, it's a great episode. I love it. One of my favorite bits is when the kids are getting their mail call after Bart takes over the camp. And you hear the kids yelling, oh, brownies! A change of underwear! Or my personal favorite, my insulin! How that kid went the whole summer without his insulin is beyond me. Alright, moving on. Next, we're going to talk about the 12th episode of the 4th season, Marge versus the Monorail. This is definitely a personal favorite. It's very well done. It even has a hilarious song that my wife has caught me singing and dancing to randomly, jazz hands included, or just singing along and dancing along as I watch the actual episode, which was the style at the time. Basically, what happens, Mr. Burns gets busted dumping nuclear waste in the local park. Because, as we all know, Mr. Burns is the picture of business ethics. And I don't know what tipped off the feds. It could have been a whistleblower. It could have been subtle clues like a sentient, mutated, tentacled tree in the park that was eating children, I'm assuming. You know, so Mr. Burns is ordered to pay millions in fines. And the town holds a meeting to decide, what do we do with the money? Marge suggests, of course, fixing Main Street, which is just laden with potholes and is damaged from people just driving like assholes. You know, makes sense. Of course, smooth-talking charlatan by the name of Lyle Landley comes through and cons the town through the catchiest fucking song on the planet, and soon they're giving them all that millions to build a monorail in the town. Why Springfield needs a goddamn monorail is beyond me. I don't even think they have a train system, let alone like a subway. Why the hell do they need a monorail? And, you know, corners are cut, of course. They're giving the drunks the cushy jobs and whatnot. And Homer is chosen to be the conductor after an intensive 3-week course where they learn such beautiful things as mono means one, rail means rail. And somehow Homer's just randomly picked as Lanley's trying to bolt with the money. Homer decides to, of course, give a tour of the monorail to the family, where they discover this thing is just poorly put together and just shoddy. They open up the fire extinguisher compartment to find a family of possums. Of course, Homer named the big one Bitey. Marge goes to Lyle Lanley's office to complain, only to find out the whole monorail is a scam. Well, duh. Marge travels to North Haverbrook, which was another one of Lanley's victims, along with Brockway and Ogdenville. She meets Sebastian Cobb, who was hired to build the monorail in North Haverbrook. He admits that corners were cut, you know, with bad wiring, faulty brakes, and the celebrity on the maiden voyage was Gallagher. Damn, Lanley was cheap. Of course, the train goes haywire with Homer at the controls, and it's up to him to save the day, and their celebrity cameo, Leonard Nimoy. Homer successfully stops the train, saving everyone, because how is the series going to continue if they die in a fiery wreck? You know. And Lanley gets his comeuppance when his nonstop flight to Tahiti makes a layover in North Haverbrook, where he is promptly assaulted by an angry mob. because his up-ins should come. Monorail, 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 mono, don't. This next one does have a bit of a personal connection for me, and I will explain in a minute. Bart vs. Australia, Season 6, Episode 16. Bart learns of the Coriolis effect after losing a bathroom products race with Lisa in the bathroom sink, how it makes water basically flow counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere and clockwise in the southern hemisphere. I'm not going to go into the science of that because it actually doesn't truly affect that, but it was great writing for the episode. So, of course, he starts calling a bunch of random countries he finds on his globe in the southern hemisphere to find out, hey, which way does the water flow in your toilet? And nobody can give him a straight answer. And, of course, he's making these long-distance calls. You know, he realizes it's costing a whole bunch of money. So when he calls Australia, he uses a collect call method and leaves the poor kid on the other end of the line for hours, racking up a $900 due phone bill. Of course, the boy's father is quite upset and takes us all the way to the Prime Minister, Andy. And of course, this also leads to an international incident because where would we be on The Simpsons without some sort of international or national incident? So the family flies out to Australia for an apology at the behest of the U.S. State Department. Deals are made, and the Australian government decides that instead of just a simple, I'm sorry for what I did, I apologize, it'll never happen again, they decide a booting is in order. And a booting is where you get kicked in the ass with a gigantic fucking boot that looks like that big-ass boot from Super Mario Bros. 3 that you would climb in and bounce around and stomp everybody. Oh, that thing was cool. Of course, Bart dodges the booting. They steal the boot, throw it through a window, and him and Homer take off, getting chased after by Marge, or by the chased after with Marge and Lisa by basically all of Australia, because all of Australia is apparently in that one building. And they escape to the U.S., you know, of course, getting to watch the ravaging effects of Bart's abandoned bullfrog that he couldn't bring into the country, so he just dropped it at the airport and expected nothing to happen. And it bred and was destroying the countryside in Australia. Of course, they got their problem when a koala bear stowed away on their helicopter that was taking them to the USS Walter Mondale. It's a laundry ship. Now, one of my favorite things is the fact that I did go to Australia in 2003, and I may or may not have tried a couple of the things they pulled in here, like hoping to get a giant ass can of Foster's beer. And my buddy and I playing Knifey Spoonie at every restaurant we went to. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Knifey Spoonie, that's where you pull the old Crocodile Dundee gag of, you call that a knife? This is a knife, and you're supposed to pull out a bigger knife, but instead you pull out a spoon. And, of course, the other person, if they identify that that's not a knife, that's a spoon. I see you played Knifey Spoonie before. Also, the first thing my dumbass did when I walked off the ship was I went to go flush a toilet and see which way it went. Because on U.S. Navy ships, when you flush the toilet, it basically is just vacuum sucked down, so there's no real swirl. So I flushed, and it went that way. Of course, that could have been just the way the toilet was designed. We don't know. Science behind it. Next thing my goofy ass did was get a phone card to call the U.S., to call my uncle, who was a big Simpsons fan at the time, and just yell crazily into the phone, into his answering machine, about how the Simpsons were right, I'm in Australia, and the toilets go the other way. And he told me that to this day, one of the things he regrets is not having that answering machine tape of his nephew calling him from Australia, excitedly telling him how the Simpsons were right about the toilets going the other way. I love Australia. I'd love to go back there one day. It was a blast. and maybe one day I'll have the money and can convince my wife that the fun of Australia is worth the every kind of animal that's probably out to kill you out there. But it was a blast, and it was a dream come true. Love it. All right. Next episode is 22 short films about Springfield, which is the 21st episode of Season 7. Damn, they were so close, it could have been the 22nd episode. It's an episode that's basically got mildly connected vignettes about the goings-on in Springfield. You know, every one of these kind of has a little connection to a point, such as Lisa ends up getting gum in her hair, and all the townsfolk decide they want to stop by the house and say, hey, this is how you get gum out of hair. You put ice on it. You freeze it and smack it out with a hammer. No, you put peanut butter on it. No, you put mayonnaise on it. No, you do this. It's like, who the hell is going to put an entire condiment shelf on someone's head to get gum out? I mean, why not just go snippity-snip? Okay, gum's up. Cool. No. That has to happen. You have other things such as Homer accidentally getting Maggie stuck in a newspaper stand, to which he ends up, his solution is just take the whole thing out of the ground and, you know, don't go home and say, hey, get a quarter and pop it in. No. Just take the whole thing home. You have Dr. Nick saving the day as he's getting disciplined by the review board at the hospital for more of his horse shit. Because Grandpa Simpson demanded to speak to a quack. And so he told him he was going to get skin failure and told somebody to zap him with a wire from a light every 5 seconds so that his skeleton won't jump out. Sounds about Dr. Nick. But my favorite story out of this whole thing, if you can't tell by my nickname, is Skinner and the Superintendent, which basically goes like this. Superintendent Chalmers goes to Principal Skinner's house for lunch. And, of course, he promises an unforgettable luncheon. Skinner goes into the kitchen to realize his roast is burning. Oh, no, what do I do? He decides he wants to run over to Krusty Burger and just buy that and disguise his own cooking. Delightfully devilish, Seymour. Of course, Chalmers comes in, says, why is there smoke coming out of your oven? That's not smoke. That's steam from the delicious steamed clams we're having for lunch. Okay, cool. So he leaves. Skinner goes, gets the food, comes out and says, hey, I hope you're ready for hamburgers. Thought we were having steamed clams. Oh, no, 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 no. I said steamed hams. That's what I call hamburgers. And his lies just get more ridiculous and increasingly goofy until he realizes that, yeah, he's been caught. And he's like, yeah, he goes in the kitchen to kind of, you know, kind of come out and reset and say, oh, you know, hey, I hope you had a lot of fun. You know, I'm pooped. And it's like, okay. Chalmers is about to leave. He notices the entire kitchen is on fire. And he says, good Lord, what is happening in there? Of course, if you know this sketch, Aurora Borealis. So he somehow convinces Chalmers that it is the Aurora Borealis going on in his kitchen. At this time of year, at this time of day, in this part of the country, localized entirely within his kitchen. My favorite part, always, of that episode is just that whole 2.5 minute sequence. It's where I got my nickname. It's where I got the title of this podcast. If you got a problem with that, well, tough noogies. It's a solid episode. One of my other favorites is the fact that Nelson, laughing at everybody, laughs at the very tall man who was introduced in this episode, who was driving his tiny little Beetle, which is the largest automobile that I could afford. And he goes on to humiliate Nelson. And the show basically ends from a certain point. It's wrapped around to Bart and Milhouse just basically spitting off the overpass in the cars and squirting mustard in there because that's what 10-year-olds with free time do, apparently. All right, moving on to the final episode of this episode. Simpson Tide, which is the 19th episode of the 9th season. Basically, Homer, being Homer, decided that the last donut needed to be a little bigger. So he puts it in the reactor, hoping to make it bigger, because Homer thinks this is a 50s sci-fi movie where radiation makes everything big. Of course, now it fries the donut and fucks up the reactor. He tries to tell Mr. Burns it's his first day, but of course Smithers calls him out of, yeah, it's not his first day. Homer gets fired because, as he should, technically I believe that might even be a felony, but it's the Simpsons. And so, dejected, Homer's sitting at home, sees a commercial for United States Navy Reserve, which I can still repeat in its entirety. Daybreak, Jakarta. The men and women of the United States Navy are fighting for your freedom. You're in Lubbock, Texas, hosing the stains off a monument. You're in the U.S. Navy Reserve, America's 17th line of defense between the Mississippi National Guard and the League of Women Voters. After basic training, you only work one weekend a month, and most of that time, you're drunk off your ass. I will kind of say that in the reserves, I was not actually drunk off my ass most of the time. I think I would have, at maximum, if I drank on a drill weekend, one or two beers. That was about it. I tried to be a good boy because I saw more than my fair share of people show up to drill hungover and or possibly still intoxicated. I did not want to be that person. Anyways, Homer, along with Apu, Moe, and Barney all joined the Naval Reserve because they all had to go together like the damn deer hunter, which I'm pretty sure a couple of them with their records shouldn't have been allowed anywhere near a recruiting station, but cartoon. So after some shenanigans and basic training, many of which I swear to God I did not pull in basic, they go out on a war game. And Homer is assigned to a nuclear submarine because he was on a, you know, in a nuclear plant, because that's a prerequisite for working on a goddamn submarine. No special training needed. Before Homer leaves, he admonishes Bart on an earring that he got because he wanted it to simply to be cool, and he confiscates it. Homer gets promoted pretty much while they're doing the briefing because he impresses the captain with the, is the poop deck really what I think it is? I like the cut of your jib, son. What's a jib? True story. That's how I got promoted in the Navy. Twice. So, they're at a little war game in the submarine. I don't know what Homer's exact job is. The captain takes a shine to him. Finds out there's an obstruction in one of the torpedo tubes. I don't know why the captain decided he needed to go figure it out himself. Why not send one of the torpedoman's mates? That's the idea. Of course, they're probably the ones causing the obstruction. You never know. So, of course, this torpedoman happens to be Barney. And the captain opens up the torpedo tube to find contraband. Chips, donuts, beer. Things you really shouldn't have on a submarine. Oh, especially chips. Should not have a submarine, but especially beer. So he starts climbing in to dig out the rest of it. Of course, their sonar picks up the enemy sub for the war game. And they're like, well, Homer, for some reason the captain left you in charge. What do we do? And the captain's in the torpedo tube thinking, don't fire the torpedo. Don't fire the torpedo. Homer fires the torpedo. But Homer fired the torpedo. I cannot do a good Morgan Freeman, I'm sorry. And of course, the captain gets launched out of the torpedo tube, leaving Homer completely in charge. Which also led to one of my favorite lines after they got attacked by a submarine later on. Sonar out. Navigation out. What's out? What's in? Ice blended mocha drinks and David Schwimmer. Well, he is handsome in an ugly sort of way. So Homer decides, I'm going to get this ship back to port. So he starts going. You know what? We're going right this whole time. I'm going to take a left. And ends up almost going towards Russia, who reveals himself to be still the Soviet Union. And Homer gets tailed because, well, he's stealing a submarine, so that's considered treason. They get depth charged and forced to surface, but not before Homer plugs a pinhole leak in the hull with Bart's earring, which I will tell you is physically impossible because water pressure. So he surfaces. He gets told by all the surrounding navies, which were the U.S., I believe Britain, Spain, Vikings, and Antarctica, which was a small aircraft carrier manned by penguins. And of course, he tells them each in their own language, "It's my first day." Everybody laughs. He's let off the hook because the tribunal hosting his court-martial were all being indicted for other crimes, which was about the norm for the U.S. military back in the 80s and 90s. So he gets let off the hook with a dishonorable discharge, and presumably because Deus Ex Machina rehired at the power plant, because otherwise they couldn't have power plant jokes. So, I mean, there were a lot of jokes when I enlisted from my dad and my uncles, you know, asking me, "Hey, have you shot the captain on a torpedo tube yet? You know, how much beer and donuts does a torpedo tube hold?" Things like that, because oddly enough, I became a sonar technician, so part of what I did was undersea warfare, and I did have torpedo men in my division, so I got to be in the torpedo magazines, which was pretty freaking cool. So, yeah, a lot of comedy came out of that episode, and I still watch it to this day. I don't pick it apart as a veteran because it's The Simpsons, and it's one of my favorite episodes, and it actually came out around the same time I initially enlisted, so there you go. Anyways, that is my top five favorite episodes of The Simpsons, at least from the Golden Age. I would have had more than a few, but I don't want to make this a three-parter because there are so many episodes I love. One day I'm actually going to go into the Halloween episodes because those in and of themselves are just masterpieces. At least like the first six or seven are just pure masterpieces. So this is where I would normally do the plug and play segment, but unfortunately I'm thinking of discontinuing plug and play because, you know, I'm not really finding much that I can really plug that people aren't like all over playing, and I've essentially run out of businesses for the time being to plug, and I wasn't getting a whole lot of good feedback on it anyway, so I may discontinue it. We're going to see for a couple episodes, but I hope a good time was had by all. You can find me on Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as SteamedHams81. Definitely try to reach out to me. Tell me what you liked. Tell me what you didn't like. Maybe if you have an idea of something you'd like me to discuss on this, you just want to say hi. And if you like the podcast, of course, spread the word. Tell your friends. Tell your coworkers. Tell your enemies. You know, tell everybody. I'd like to get an audience. So, I hope you join me next week for another Unforgettable Luncheon, when the topic will be something nerdy.